Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. It's Wednesday. It's time for our conversation with the Dakota Political Junkies. Today, we welcome Jonathan Ellis and Dana Ferguson, both with Argus Leader Media. Jonathan, thanks for being here.
Hey, Lori.
Dana, thanks for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
All right, let's jump right in. One of the top stories of the week is that affects the most South Dakotans is probably an upcoming farm bill, and we're looking at soybean harvest time. Dana has a new piece at argusleader.com about how the trade war with China is impacting farmers here in South Dakota. Dana, give us an overview of where we're at in the season.
Sure. So as farmers begin going back to start farming, harvesting, and getting their crops in, they're facing some bad news. Their harvests aren't being valued at quite the rate that they were hoping for. All of this comes amid tit-for-tat tariff conversations, mostly with China and the U.S. So as farmers get these answers, they're feeling a little bit saddened just to hear that this trade war is really impacting them at home. Throughout the summer, we'd heard from farmers who had said they're really willing to be patient and be on the front lines of the trade war and take whatever is going to be dealt their way in terms of reduced values. But it's hard to know just how big an impact this is going to have for them and what the long-term implications might be if this continues.
The harvest is good this year, but the news is bad. Farmers sort of knew this was coming. Are you getting any reactions from individual farmers? Is it changing, you know, their political convictions? Or are they just feeling, you know, frustrated at the local level and not sure what to do next?
It really varies by farmer, and I think some of that really has to do with their political affiliations. I think that there are some who are very supportive of the president and understand that there need to be some changes made in terms of China being held accountable on other terms. And so they know that this is going to be important to those negotiations, and they're willing to take the losses, at least in the short term. And for some, they're happy to do it in the longer term as well. But there are some who are becoming a little more skeptical. They thought this would be over by now. They thought come harvest, this all would have ended. The president would have been able to negotiate and get them some of the rates that they had been hoping for. But it doesn't look like that's going to happen, at least in the very near term, and they're having to continue to be very patient.
Right. And Jonathan, in the meantime, you know, Chinese buyers have found other markets to source. So there could be long-term implications for South Dakota growers with this trade war.
Yeah, I think that that's the concern that a lot of growers do have, is that if China finds these other markets, that even if the trade negotiations, the trade impasse are negotiated away, that once China has sort of established a foothold with other markets, that China won't be coming back. So that is one of the long-term concerns. You know, the question that some economists have: well, if China is getting soybeans from somewhere else, that would create a void of soybeans, sure, that opportunity, maybe other opportunities for U.S. growers. So, it's hard to see how this all plays out. I mean, I've heard concerns that if more China is getting more soybeans, for example, from South America, then South America could actually open up more land to soybean development and even create a worse market. So I mean, there's a lot of unknowns right now.
Meanwhile, there's a lot of soybeans that need to be stored, and soybeans don't get stored, and they need to be dried, and all kinds of complications for farmers here in South Dakota. Jonathan, let's switch topics a little bit and talk a little bit about data companies and an article that you wrote sort of looking at how who's involved in the conversation. Give us an overview.
Sure. Well, the article was written in advance of a hearing that Senator Thune presided over today in the Senate Commerce Committee. And the senator had invited six big tech or internet companies to participate in the meeting, and there were some consumer privacy, data privacy groups that were very concerned that there was not a sort of consumer presence on this panel, that it was a totally industry-dominated panel. And they had sent the both Senator Thune and Senator Bill Nelson, who's the ranking member, sent a letter outlining their concerns that that there are no consumer representatives present here. Mm-hmm. And the reason I think that these consumer groups are upset is that you now have the likes of Google and Facebook coming to the federal government saying, hey, we need regulation now with regard to data privacy. And they're doing that because you had the European Union enact pretty strict privacy standards. You had California go that way, and the industry now is very concerned that that state by state data privacy provisions are going to be enacted. So now they're running to the federal government to try to get something done there, and to preempt that. And what the consumer groups are very concerned about is that they're just going to that the federal regulations are going to water down or be very weak. And so that's one of the concerns that they had. Senator Thune's people, and Senator Thune actually addressed this today in his hearing. He did say that he would have additional hearings, at least, and that they're actually going to hold another hearing next month, and that this would be stakeholders, consumer groups would be allowed to present testimony at this hearing, including some privacy activists. So all of this is kind of in process right now,
right.
But it will be interesting to see what sort of regulations come out of the federal government now with regard to our data, which the likes of Google and Facebook and Amazon and all of these companies, they're using this data, consumer data, and they're using it to target us in terms of advertising and everything else. Some of the privacy groups, they're monitoring us, where we go 24/7 with our cell phone. So there are a lot of people saying that the federal government needs to step in here.
Does there seem to be, Jonathan, in this conversation, anything that ties into the midterm elections or concerns about that? Or does it seem like the Senate Commerce Committee is sort of keeping those issues separate? Or do they sort of bleed over?
They probably bleed over a little bit. I mean, I get the sense that what the Commerce Committee, they're policy focused. But there's no doubt that this data is being used by politicians, by campaigns, to help find voters. So there's no doubt that there is a political part to this. I mean, I get the sense that what the committee is doing is very policy oriented, though.
Right. And what was the justification or the reasoning behind not having the consumer presence now versus having it later? Did Senator Thune and members of the committee give a reason for that?
Yeah, I mean, the reason they gave is that it's sometimes very difficult to get all the get these businesses together to testify, and also that this would, by bringing the likes of like Google and Apple and Facebook, AT&T, that you would have consumers, you have these very recognizable names that most people would be able to identify with. So that was their reasoning.
Right. Well, speaking of Senator Thune, we're going to switch gears here a little bit and talk about some of his responses to the Brett Kavanaugh hearings as Judge Kavanaugh is evaluated for the United States Supreme Court and confirmation hearings, some of the allegations that have come out about him. And Senator Thune was on the Senate floor talking a little bit about how he saw this conversation. And here's a little clip for you.
Mr. President, while I expected Democrats to fight Judge Kavanaugh's nomination, I expected them to do so honorably. I expected them to make their objections known, grill Judge Kavanaugh in the hearing, and then cast their votes against the judge. But that's not what happened. As it became clear that Judge Kavanaugh was headed toward a vote and confirmation, it was leaked that the ranking member on the Senate Judiciary Committee had a letter containing an unsubstantiated allegation against Judge Kavanaugh regarding an alleged incident when he was in high school. The ranking member had received this letter at the end of July, but chose to sit on it for a month and a half without discussing its existence with Republicans. Now, if the ranking member thought this allegation was credible, she had an absolute responsibility to bring it up immediately so that it could be addressed. Holding it until a politically opportune moment was a betrayal of her obligation as a leader on the committee. If, on the other hand, she thought the allegation to be false, which is the only possible justification for her decision to sit on the allegation for 6 weeks, then the subsequent decision by Democrats to exploit the allegation in an attempt to derail Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation is frankly despicable.
That's Senator John Thune on the floor of the Senate talking about the ranking member he refers to, I believe, is Dianne Feinstein, and she has said that she held on to the letter from Dr. Ford because Dr. Ford asked her for confidentiality. So I know we could talk about this for a long time, couldn't we? Dana Ferguson, we know what Senator John Thune thinks about what's happening with the Kavanaugh hearings. Have we heard anything from other congressional delegation about their thoughts?
Largely what we've heard so far, at least, is that they're very supportive of Judge Kavanaugh, that they feel that much of these last-minute allegations coming forward and the way that they've come forward are meant to make the process of putting forth Judge Kavanaugh a hyper-partisan sort of process, and they have publicly worried about what this is going to mean for future hearings for potential justices, if this is going to be the common practice now, if others are going to be put through this phase of allegations and vetting those allegations. So in a sense, what we have heard is largely about just their concerns about these unsubstantiated or not very well vetted out allegations. Some of the candidates, too, have begun commenting on this, at least to us, as we've reached out to them for comment. And what we've heard, for the most part, is that they want to see Judge Kavanaugh get a fair hearing. And to them, that means that they want these women who bring forth allegations to be heard, for senators to be able to ask them questions, and for there to be a time to really vet that out to make sure that if these are valid concerns, that they're being considered at the level that they should. But they want Judge Kavanaugh to be able to defend himself against that committee, too.
Jonathan Ellis, wasn't there a phase of vetting allegations before? This isn't the first time that people have come forward about Supreme Court candidates with, you know, with thoughts on their character and their past behavior.
Well, you know, the latest allegations that came out today are mind-boggling, and I don't know if your listeners are familiar with them or not. But I mean, if there even anything. Any truth to them, it would to me say that there's been a colossal failure by the vetting process. I mean, this Judge Kavanaugh, keep in mind, you know, worked in the Bush White House. He was which of course requires an FBI check there. He was vetted, you know, for the DC circuit circuit court judgeship. I mean, that requires an FBI background check. And then to hear the accusations today, in which there's all these parties going on, and you know, did anybody ever get interviewed? One has to, you know, I'm just wondering, like, what happened here? I mean, if any of this is true, what happened to the background of the backgrounding process, and is it broken?
Yeah, and Dana, there are a whole lot of women who are saying, yeah, that process is broken. This shouldn't really be a surprise.
Right. Well, that is something we're certainly hearing from a number of women. And what we're hearing from skeptics, too, is that if at any point Judge Kavanaugh lied about any of this, if any of it does turn out to be true, that should be something that is enough to keep him from that confirmation. Obviously, telling the truth is something important for a judge, but it's hard to know just how they're going to vet some of this out. I think we should note, too, that in addition to the formal process, hearing from more skeptics, certainly online there's been an incredible and overwhelming amount of outpouring of other women and men too sharing their stories, similar to what we saw a year ago with the Me Too movement, women and men opening up about why they didn't report after they were assaulted or raped. So it's been just an outpouring over the past couple of weeks. Mm.
Jonathan, one of the things that has struck me is sort of the dual arguments, or the arguments that are happening at the same time. On one hand, you have people on the who are pro Judge Kavanaugh saying this is all politically motivated, and then you also have them saying, "Well, wait a minute, this happened when he was a lot younger, and it really shouldn't count." So almost sort of dueling arguments. There's a lot happening from a social standpoint as far as what this means. If you remember the Anita Hill hearings and what that meant, now here we are again, but this time we're here during the Me Too era. How wide-reaching, Jonathan, do you think the implications are of what happens next?
Well, I think they're extremely wide-reaching. I mean, I have seen some of that duality where you have people say, hey, this happened so long ago in high school, or what if it did. I mean, but
right,
I think from the sense that I've seen in people that I follow and kind of watch, that most, I think most conservatives are just saying that this is it can't be proved. I mean, so they're denying that the allegation allegation ever took place. But I mean, it's far-reaching in the sense that, you have on one side a political movement that just, they want to ram through a nomination, perhaps without maybe the proper due diligence, and on the other side you have a group that seems to be, having an issue with due process. So I think it's concerning on both sides, areas there. I mean, there's no due process for Judge Kavanaugh. And on the other side, they don't want due process either because they want to ram it through. So it's very difficult, and it is very far-reaching, and this is a very historic moment.
Yeah, and Dana, what we hear Senator Thune saying is, pay attention because this has impact on how these hearings will be handled in the future as well. So women are saying this is historic, men are saying this is historic, Republicans, Democrats, but not the least of which it impacts how these nominations are handled going forward.
Right. Well, and if you look back at some of the differences that we're seeing too, just that intensified effort or the consciousness about optics, not wanting it to, again, be an all male panel of senators who are considering the testimony of the woman who brought forth the allegations, but taking the tact of bringing on an attorney to consider some of these claims that are being made and question this witness, apparently in an attempt to make sure that there's a little bit more sensitivity or perceived sensitivity there to what she has allegedly been through. It seems as though there might be some learning from history, but I suppose we won't be able to know that until after Thursday, after we get to see exactly how historic a moment this will be.